Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. I'm Phil Holdsworth, founder of Aurum Gold, and your host today. And my very special guest is Jane Baldwin. Jane, welcome to Wisdom Chat.
Hi, Phil. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, wonderful. Jane, you're a life coach, aren't you?
I am indeed.
Just tell me a little bit about you being a life coach.
So as a life coach, I invite the gorgeous humans that we all are to look at their thoughts and feelings, and in turn how that impacts what they will and won't do, because it's absolutely, and I believe with every ounce of my being, that it's the key to everything. Yeah. And, you know, beautiful things alchemize in a space of coaching, from having more time and energy to creating better relationships, having more enjoyment and pleasure, and just generally feeling better. So that's my world.
That's brilliant. And I was just reflecting on something you put on LinkedIn recently, a quote from Buddha: "What we think, we become." And it really grabbed my attention, because I often talk in the world of money about how we think about money. What's the first thing that comes to mind? And often people will say, you know, money is happiness, money is power, money is choice, money is all these things. And you know, it's interesting then, we're giving away, as you were saying to me earlier, we're giving away our power to something that actually can't do anything for us, other than, yes, it can contribute to life. But so just in terms of that thinking, just tell me a little bit about what's on your thinking with regards to the way people think about themselves. And
I think the first and actually the most important relationship we have is the one we have with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the experience that we have with ourselves, because, you know, again, we mentioned earlier that, you know, the way we treat ourselves can really change the world. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, you know, it's what's going on, what's the mind chatter? And you'll also see, you know, my brain is my first home. It's like, what's the vibe do I want to have in my home? Who are the people I want to invite into that home? How do I want to decorate it?
Yeah.
Do I want to look in those dusty basement cupboards? It's like, what is that overall vibe? If I had a party, who would I invite in? And to me, that is the first relationship, because it's when you're mentioning about with the money, it was really fascinating to listen to you speak about that, because you say that, you know, they give their power away. They'll think about money as something that's going to help them feel happy or help them feel powerful. And they attach that to the money. And that is such a critical thing to say, because the way we think about something, our thoughts create our feelings. Mm. So if somebody thinks to themselves, oh, money, some people will be like, yeah, that's amazing. And other people will start to feel quite anxious and uncomfortable. And there's a myriad of feelings that people will have if you just talk to them about money, which I'm sure you see in people. So it's what we're thinking is critical, and it's being able to observe what we're thinking. So it's like, oh, okay, I've thought that and I've felt this. Now let me look at that thought. Do I think it's true? Is that true? Do I believe that? Do I want to believe that?
Yeah.
So there's so much tied in that. So I love that you raise it.
I'm reminded of a passage in the Bible that actually says, as a man thinks, so is he. And you know, it's interesting, isn't it, how our view of the world and the view of things, or whether it's whatever it may be, our relationships, our work, even our money, you know, how we view these things have been shaped, you know, through our sort of developmental period and our life's experiences, but also affect what happens now and also shapes our future. So it makes me think then, blimey, I need to be making sure that I'm thinking the right kind of things, because I don't want to have a very negative future.
And I will pick up on that. And I've also nodded, which is great for a podcast, that I nod a lot when you're speaking, which really, I'm just going to share that with everyone. I've just noticed that I'm like, I nod.
So, it's like the nodding dog in the car, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's great. And this, and I, again, I love that you shared this, because it's, this is something that I, you know, help people with, is actually, I'm going to use the word tool for want of a better word, but we have, there's lots of tools and strategies, and those tools and strategies we can use in a way that serve us, and we can use in a way that does that, you know, doesn't serve us. And I specifically use the word serve, as it helps take us a step away from the kind of like positives and negatives, which we can actually have quite a physical response to. So it's like, does this serve us? Because sometimes something that serves us doesn't always come with a great feeling. It can come with some discomfort.
Yeah.
So it's like, but actually this feeling of discomfort, whatever that might be, whether it's anxiety, overwhelm, somebody's kind of going blank or shutting down, whatever it happens to be, sometimes those things can serve us. So the way I like to think is, yes, we have this whole kind of history, and it's interesting research now that even kind of like beliefs and values that our predecessors and parents have had, we take on board at a genetic level, and that we have them now. So yes, we are this we are this kind of mass of experiences of our own and other people's, which have brought us all to where we are in this moment. And it's like, then what do we do with this as we move forwards? And the way I love to think about it is that our brains do not know the difference between real and imagined. So there are no thought police. So actually there's some playfulness, which is a really good strategy for people, because it helps calm their physiology down. It helps give them access to creativity and things. So if you're more playful with things, it's like, ah, oh, there's no thought police. I can get to think what are exactly the things I would like to. Nobody's going to tell me I can't, because it's in my head.
Yeah.
So actually, what do I want? What do I truly, truly wish to think about and spend my time marinating in?
Yeah, I like that, the thought police. I like that. just have this little picture of, you know, these little characters in your mind going around going, you can think whatever you want to think, or no, you can't think that. But but that actually is quite significant, isn't it? Because oftentimes when people find themselves, so in my world, in financial difficulty, they feel powerless. They feel that they don't have choice. And it's very interesting when you listen to the conversations around it, as if money could actually give them choice. And they don't realise that they've actually, they're powerful beings. They can choose what to think. They can choose to go down the negative route and therefore shape a negative world around them. Or they can choose to go down a positive route that actually then fires up the creativity in them.
Yes, and it's very true, because it's I'll often use the word circumstance. So somebody, for example, could be in a certain amount of debt. Now, one person, that they could be really struggling with that. And I talk about these things very much from a point of kindness and without judgment. You know, and I think that's very important for people, because we're very, very good at judging ourselves. We're human beings having a human experience. We are wired to make judgments. And that doesn't always serve us in some situations, because it's like another layer that we love to put on things. So it's just, so to go back to your example, somebody could be in debt. That's a circumstance. And by that, I mean, everybody would agree on it. And different people will think about it in different ways. One person could view that debt, and for them, it's a real struggle to their thinking and the feeling and the things they will and won't do around that debt is really difficult for them. Somebody else could have exactly the same amount of debt, and they don't have an issue with it whatsoever.
That is so true, and I've come across people like that. But yeah, it's...
So I think, and again, as you were saying, it's this So one person can have that. So their nervous system is in, you know, has a physical response, has a reaction to being in that debt. And when they're in that, people, you know, perhaps have this fight or flight. There's all sorts of variations around that, tend and befriend. There's all sorts of things that people go into when they're in this space of their nervous system having been activated. And when it is, they lose access to that part of their brain that can do the problem solving, that can be creative. So they actually lose access to that. So by, you know, with the work that you're doing, you know, you help them to calm around that so that they then can access that part of their brain that goes, actually, let's look and explore what all the possible solutions could be. And I always come from a point of actually honor how you're feeling about a situation. Don't try and push that beach ball underneath the sea because it's going to pop up with force. Yep. So acknowledge how you're feeling about any situation. Allow the feeling to complete in a healthy way. And then you'll be in a state, your physiology and brain will be in a position to then be creative and look at the problems and look at it from a much better, much more powerful position to say, actually, what can we do here? What are the pros and cons? So all of the great things that you're doing with people.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you often see it when people are in a position where they're feeling stressed and anxious about their financial situation. And you're right to say that we need to acknowledge that that situation is there. It would be foolish, really, in some respects, not to acknowledge, yes, there is a financial difficulty. However, we also need to acknowledge that the fact that when we are in that place of stress and anxiety, we are hampered at being able to come up with the solutions moving forward. And that's where having somebody alongside, some assistance, is really helpful. The problem with people asking for help often is, what will people think of me? How people will judge me? How will that affect my career? What will my family think? And so these then become those bars that hold people in prisons until that point of desperate need where they just cry out for help in the hope that somebody will help them. And and certainly on my journey, in terms of the work that I do, to be able to encourage people to see themselves as being these powerful individuals who've got the ability to choose, that there are certain things they can do to reduce their stress and anxiety, so they're now in a better place to think more creatively about the circumstances they're facing, and then being able to give them the tools by which they can sort of help themselves moving forward, or know where to go to get the help that they need in order to be able to move forward. So it's, yeah, creativity is quite powerful, isn't it? When it makes a person really powerful.
It does. And I think there's, and again, this is why, you know, my invitation, you know, to people is always this, let's look at how you're thinking and feeling about things. Because you've just given some, you know, classic examples there of people going, you know, what are people going to think of me? So when somebody has that thought, what are people going to think of me? There'll be a feeling that comes up when they think that thought. And there are, and the feeling, you know, if somebody's, they, you know, if it's something they want to kind of shy away, they don't want to speak up, they want to shut themselves away. And what I would offer is that is completely normal, because people will think, oh, there's something wrong with me. So whenever anybody has a thought that comes with some kind of flavor that they are less than, and I use bunny ears, but they are less than in some way, that's a real aha moment to go, oh, okay, I see, I'm in that part of my brain that just wants to fight or flight, you know. That, oh, I see that, I see what's going on. It's not a character flaw. It doesn't mean I'm broken, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me. I see that, I can be compassionate and kind to that part of me. And now, once I've allowed that to settle, I'm now going to move into this other pot because I'm going to think a different thought, which is, I have control over the choices that I make.
Yeah.
I have the ability to solve problems. And then, as you say, then they can go into that, they have access to that creativity. And I love the word creativity because to me, it's, you know, we can bring all of these different things together. You know, I love a technical term, things and stuff. We can bring all these things together. And in our own unique way, we can alchemize those into something that is really unique to us.
Mm.
And it's having that ability to do that and that creativity. So it's always about what works for the individual. So what's creative for one person might not feel creative to somebody else. And that's okay. It's how it's supposed to be. We're human beings. We're different.
Yeah.
It's similar in many ways. We're different in many ways.
Yeah.
So actually, what is that creativity? How does somebody become, you know, access that creativity and build it into their kind of everyday lives in a way that's, you know, doesn't turn into a full-time occupation for somebody who doesn't want it to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the most common statements that I come across often is, I'm bad with money.
Mm.
And very often when you talk with the individuals, when they say that statement, it comes from either somebody who's critical of them, like a parent, or a teacher or somebody like that. Or they just have this thing of, I was no good at maths, therefore I'm bad with money.
Mm.
So, and it's interesting, isn't it, how we think that. But as soon as we think that, it's almost like we're putting a lid on our ability to develop or recognize that we have the ability to develop and to be creative and to be powerful and to make choices in life. And these things haven't been removed from us. They're a part of us, but we're just not accessing them because of this lid that we've put on.
Exactly. And again, this is that thought of, and I like to think of beliefs as a thought we keep on thinking.
Hmm.
And we keep thinking it and we haven't questioned it. So I am bad with money. My first question is that true?
Yes.
Show me, and I'd let, you know, and say to people, let's explore. What are all the ways in which you feel that is true? And let's list all the ways that you feel that that isn't true throughout your time. Because, you know, as we said, we're all this accumulation of all the things that have happened before that have brought us to this point. And we get to choice to say, yeah, somebody who say I am bad with money, and this is where I talk to people about belief ladders. So sometimes it can be too much for people to go from I'm bad with money to I'm amazing with money, you know, and, you know, I'm going to repeat it every day as I look at myself in the mirror. And it's, I'm going to believe that in 90 days time, because that's what neuroscience tells us, creates a new habit. Mm. And it doesn't happen. And it's because it's too much of a stretch for the brain. So it's finding the little runs of the ladder in between. So for somebody that says, I am bad with money, okay, let's find what the next step is, or what the first step is to get you to, I am great with money. Mm. And for somebody, it could be, there is money.
Yeah.
So that their brain can't argue, there is money in the world. We have bits of paper, we have bits of metal, we have numbers on a screen. There is money. And then once they get comfortable with that, it could be there are different ways of dealing with money.
Yeah.
There are different ways of being around money. Whatever it is for that person, it's having these kind of belief ladders. But the first point is to go, oh, I'm filtering everything that comes in through this lens of I am bad with money. And because of the way my brain works, it wants to look for all of the evidence that supports that statement.
So we have,
you know, it's that actively, let me look for other evidence to say, actually,
yeah,
these are the reasons why I am good with money. Even if there's only one, start with one thing, small sweet steps, brilliant.
Yeah,
But it is a lot, isn't it, for people? I'm sure you see that.
Yes, I do. I was just thinking, as you were just describing what you're describing there, I was thinking of the confirmation bias, where people only look for the evidence that confirms what they believe.
Yes.
And I often use the example of driving down a road which has several traffic lights. And that belief that, do you know, every time I drive down this road, I always hit the red lights, but they've missed the one green light they've just driven through. And but they're looking for what confirms their belief. And it's interesting in terms of what people believe and how that shapes both the choices they make now, but also how they deal with other people. And it's interesting, there's one thing to do with somebody who's been brought up in an environment where they were shown how important it is to help other people. And they would see it as part of their responsibility. I can do my part to help other people. And so they would be generous, and they would give them money or whatever it may be. And yet somebody who's been brought up in the household where there's another statement, to be successful, you need to work hard. So we have this notion, we've got to work hard. So if you're brought up in an environment where you're working hard, then maybe your view is, I won't give to you because that takes away from you needing to work hard to help yourself. And it's these beliefs that people have that then impact other people, not just themselves. So it might impact their family, it might impact their colleagues at work, it might impact their relationships in society, friendships and community and so on, how they view things around them. Is that's something that you come across with the belief structure? And
yes, absolutely. I think of it as the ripple effect.
Right.
So, for example, somebody coming to one of your programs, they've the choice of being there, and then what they do with that information and what they do with the tools and strategies you give them will have a ripple effect to them and those around them. And it also has an impact on the trajectory of their life, where their life will go to next. And I love to think about that, because actually again, this is like, you know, the way we treat ourselves can change the world. It's very much, if we look after ourselves, if we do that, take that responsibility for ourselves in a way that serves us. So again, I spoke about this, we can use things in ways that serve us and ways that don't serve us. So if we use that strategy in a way that serves us, we can change the trajectory that we're going in. So for somebody who perhaps is struggling with their finances, rather than that going in further in a direction that they really don't want it to, they can change that trajectory to so that their finances start going in the direction that they truly want them to be. And that we have that inner responsibility to say, actually, the choices and decisions and how I treat myself and the way I think about things, the way I look at things, and the help I ask for, and the support I give other people, and all of those things changes, just ripples out from us to the way we treat ourselves, the way we treat our loved ones around us, the way we treat our wider communities, the way we treat the planet. To me, there's such a huge ripple effect to somebody working with themselves.
I can really attest to that, Jane, because quite a few years ago, there was a period of time where I went through 3 redundancies in 2 years. And the first time I was made redundant, I kind of just took it in my stride. And I thought, right, well, I've just got to get another job. And so I set about doing all the things you would do to get another job, and got into employment again, and then found myself being made redundant. Hadn't been there that long and being made redundant. And it was at that point, I felt like I had no value. I'd had no worth. I knew I was taking a bit of a nosedive. I was spiraling downwards, out of control in a sense. But what I noticed as well was how I was feeling. It was then impacting my wife, and together we kept bringing each other down. Not because we purposely did that, but it was just how we were and how we were feeling. So I still went about searching for work and so on, and got back into employment. But the third time I was made redundant, I made a conscious decision at that point. I'm not going to think like I did before. That was too dark. I don't want to go there. I am determined that I'm going to think differently. And I decided, I know, I've got a new job. And that new job is to get a job. And so I said to my wife, I've got a new job. And she says, oh, what's that? And I said, it's to get a job. And she went, oh. And I said, nope, come Monday morning, got my suit on, CVs in a case, my sandwiches. I says, I'll see you tonight when I finish work. And I determined that that's what I was going to do. My job was to go out there and get a job. And it had a profound impact on my own psychology and my own emotional well-being, but also on my family. So this ripple effect that you talk about, I could actually see both the negative, how that can impact those around you, but also the positive. So instead of going that downward spiral, we were very positive. Together we were very positive about this situation. And had I not done that, I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing today.
And you know, I absolutely honour you for that story, because there's so many amazing and beautiful things tied up in that story. And my heart goes out to you as well for having to go through those things. So thank you for sharing that.
No, well, thank you. But I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, the work that you do and the people you work with, and the kind of things that you help them with. You're talking about, you know, what lights people up in their lives. And that's something quite important to you, is about inspiration, aspirations.
Absolutely. And I think, so I am going to come back to that. That lights me up. So there's a couple of things I'd love to just touch on from what you were sharing as well. Is that, to me, you had that thought, my job is to find a job, that is my job.
Yeah.
And that gave you a feeling of determination. And from that point of determination, you were then able to take certain actions around applying for jobs. And you did it with a very different energy than had you thought, I've been made redundant three times, this is, you know, two times, this is never going to work. So you're approaching something with a very different energy. So that's, to me, that's, as a coach, that's one of the things I'm doing with people. That's why I say I invite you to look at what you're thinking and feeling, and in turn what you will and won't do. Because this, you've created a very different result by going from what you were thinking, what you were feeling, what you were then prepared to do. You created the result that you did of what you now do. And that's very different than had you been thinking about, if you'd had a different thought that took you off in a different direction. So that's why, to me, this is so key. This is the key to everything. What you think and feel impacts what you will and won't do, and in turn creates the results that you get.
Yeah.
So I wanted to touch on that. And the other thing that you were saying about this ripple effect, this comes from what's known as systems theory. And it's, if you change one element in the system, the other elements in that system will respond to that change. So a system could be the relationship that you have with your partner, with your wife. And it's like, actually, you then changed. And because you changed, she then changed, because she responded to the change you made. And again, to me, this is absolutely fundamental, because people will say, say I'm coaching somebody around their relationship with their partner, and they'll say, do you not want to see both of us together? It's like, no, I can talk to you, and coach you, and then let's see what the ripple effect is that, you know, of that is in your relationship, because the other person in the relationship will respond to that.
Yeah.
If you change the way you're thinking and feeling around money, your relationship with money will change. It will respond to that.
Yeah.
So it's such a key part of this. So thank you for
No.
When you're sharing, it's like brilliant.
It's just interesting, isn't it? When you sort of talk and exploring different things, and somebody's talking away, and suddenly, you know, it sparks something, and you, oh yes, got a memory of that, and I know how that works. I've experienced it myself, and you know. It amuses me in one sense and saddens me in another when I talk with some people still today who think what we're talking about, Jane, is all that touchy-feely, airy-fairy stuff. And to me, it's like in their mind, they're demeaning it. And yet it's the most powerful. And if they could themselves, whether they're an owner of a company or an employee within a company, whether they're a member of a family or whatever it may be, that there's a power in them that if they were only able to embrace this part of what we're talking about, could have a very, very powerful effect. But when they're not aware of it and they have certain beliefs, there is that also the opposite potential of to create an environment that is not pleasant to be a part of. And I remember, you know, that point when my wife and I, we just seemed to be downward spiraling. Mm-hmm. And it was a dark place, was that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you kind of never want to go there again.
Yes. And I would say is this, I think I'm a great believer that life is 50-50. So 50% of the time things happen that we're over the moon about, and 50% of the time things happen that we're not thrilled about at all.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, how do we look after ourselves in those situations, in both of those situations? How do we make the most of the best times, and how do we make the most of those times that we would rather not happen? And I think this comes from this, like, let's not go back to my, I always come back to this, it's not being judgmental about rights and wrongs.
Yeah.
It's the, okay, let me look. I went through this really dark time and I don't want to go back there again. I've experienced what that's like. I've also now experienced what it's like to be in this lighter part. And I prefer this lighter part. So what did I do that got me to this lighter part, and how do I keep doing that, and how do I make even more of that? So as you're saying, this oh, I tapped into that inner power of myself, of being able to go, let me take a step back from myself. I can see what's happening here. I don't want this to happen. I want this to happen over here. So let me how do I need to think about this and feel about this to be able to go over to this side of things? And it's not easy. I mean, when you were in that really dark place, it's not an easy place to then go, oh, I'm a powerful being that can create and do all these amazing things.
Yeah. Just to say, Jane, while I was in that place, you know, there were some really nice people who come along and say very encouraging things.
Yes.
And it was interesting how those encouraging things really, it felt like just weren't touching. Because it was an outside thing coming in, mm-hmm. and something needed to change internally within me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I came to the conclusion of.
Yeah, and I think it's really good to normalize that and say, yeah. You know, it's, you know, when people, and I expect you see this at times, is that when people are in the most need of help, they are often in the least position to be able to feel as though they're able to ask for help, to feel like they're resourced enough to be able to do it, to be able to say, I'm struggling, I need help. And I think that, you know, in both the work that we do can be challenging, because we know we can help people.
Yeah.
And it's like, come and have a chat. We know that position. And I would also say as well, kind of in my world, people think people only come for coaching when there's this humongous problem, but some problems are good to have, you know. Yeah. So I say to people, please don't, you know, preferably don't bring me the burnt cake, come to me before the cake is burnt. Equally, if you've got a cake that looks amazing and you want more of it and you want cherries on top and strawberries and cream around the edges, then bring it to me as well, because we can make that happen too. So it's the same, you know, it's both sides, it's two sides of a coin, isn't it? Like one side where things are actually the problems and making people feel a bit icky and jangly and they don't like it, and the other side of the coin is actually I like this and I want more of it, and this is the light, you know, what lights people up.
Yeah, well, this is the problem we have now, and that is we've run out of time. But you know, but I love those analogies that you come up with, and I can identify with them as well, and I hope our listeners can. And Jane, just in wrapping up. If somebody wanted to talk further with you, you're a lovely person. You've got such a gentleness and encouragement about you that I could well imagine the people who have experienced time with yourself will have gone away feeling so much better about themselves. How would they get hold of you?
Thank you for those words, Phil. That's really kind of you. You are such a star. I hope everyone.
I hope our listeners are hearing this.
You are such a star. I think the simplest way is take a look at my website, which is www.janebaldwin.co.uk, and you can get hold of me through there. All of my LinkedIn socials and things are on there. So
that's brilliant.
Thank you for the invitation to share that.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Jane. I really do appreciate it. Appreciate your time, and I wish you all the best in the work that you do. And hopefully we'll get to chat again sometime and explore some other things as well. So, Jane, thank you so much for joining me on Wisdom Chat today.
And thank you, Phil. As I say, you're a superstar.
Yeah, I'll just pause on that one for a moment. Thank you very much, Jane. You take care.
You too.